Good afternoon. We'll get started right after NPR News. It's just about time for Voice of the Public, our weekly call-in show on KRWG Public Media. And we are so pleased to welcome Vice Chancellor at NMSU, Dr. Ruth Johnston, who serves as the Chief COVID Officer on campus. We had a return to in-person classes this fall at NMSU. There is a livelihood on campus that we haven't seen in a long time. The Battle of I-10 is tomorrow, so we'll be sure that you have all of the information you need to take part in tomorrow's game, the Aggies versus the Miners, and what all visitors need to know when they come onto the NMSU campus. We'll also discuss NMSU's policies regarding COVID-19 procedures and safety on campus for employees and students alike. 575-646-2212. Call with your questions for Dr. Johnston next. It is 106 and time for Voice of the Public on KRWG Public Media. Thank you for joining us. 575-646-2212 is the telephone number to call if you have questions or comments this afternoon. We'd love to have you be a part of Voice of the Public. And if you're following along on Facebook, welcome. You can also leave a question or comment as we stream live on Facebook. You might also be streaming from our website, krwg.org. We're happy to have you. However we can connect this afternoon. And we are so pleased to be joined by Vice Chancellor Dr. Ruth Johnston, who is the Chief COVID Officer for NMSU. Welcome to the program, Dr. Johnston.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Why don't we start by just getting to know you a little bit? Tell us about your arrival here at NMSU and a little bit about your background.
Sure. Thank you. Well, interestingly, this is begins the third year. I started 2 years ago today.
Happy anniversary.
Right before, thank you. Who would have known coming down here from Seattle, Washington, after living there for about 42 years, down to Las Cruces, which we absolutely love being down here. But the job is a little different than I expected, and certainly the world is different than anybody expected. When I came down, I got to know people as quickly as I possibly could. Fortunately, making the rounds on the campus and trying to visit the branch campuses as well. And then, of course, all of a sudden in March, it's like, oh my gosh, what are we all going to do? So quickly, we rallied around to try to figure out what the best framework was. And I was appointed the COVID-19 officer. And it's probably been the best thing I could have ever done in some ways, because I got to know everybody around all the campuses much faster than I would have had an opportunity to. So for that, I'm grateful.
The cynical part of me was wondering if you had to draw straws for the job of Chief COVID Officer.
Well, in a way, but we had to have a leader of such because it's just so big and vast and complicated. So maybe because I was new, I had a little bit more capacity than some of the others did. But I had also just the winter before had to manage basically 3 weeks of snow events.
Oh, gosh.
In Bothell, Washington, where I was vice chancellor at that University of Washington campus. And that was really hard because we had very steep roofs. And even though there was no snow on the ground, there was snow on the roofs. And so we were super worried about what would happen to students. And so we had to stay closed longer than we wanted to. And that, of course, caused all kinds of issues. And we were working with FEMA and everybody else. And so not unlike COVID, I felt like I had some good preparation to manage kind of an emergency status.
So I was listening to your most recent town hall and just wanted to play a little bit of some just some short bits from President John Floros and Chancellor Dan Arvizu and yourself regarding just kind of the beginning of the town hall. And so let's hear a little bit.
Okay.
Maybe, maybe not. There we go.
It's a sobering realization that we probably won't see an actual end per se to this infection and this pandemic.
The virus is not a static thing. It continues to change. New variants showed up. New waves have shown up around the world, and now they're showing up in our country and including our own county right here.
What have people thought about us making these decisions? We've had all kinds of good. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You're protecting our greater community. And we've had, you're not paying attention to all the science. And we've had, don't take my rights away. We expected all that feedback. We understand that feedback, and we still have had to make decisions for the greater good of the entire community.
I can't imagine how difficult navigating all of those things has been. Things change on an almost weekly basis. So let's start by just establishing where we are right now in terms of the NMSU community and what the university expects of students and staff, and what kind of safety protocols are in place.
Well, you probably saw, for those of you who are in the NMSU community, that indoor masks are required at all times, with the exception of if you're in your office privately with your door shut, or for, at least at this point, for faculty who are fully vaccinated and at least 6 foot distance to be able to remove the mask in order to teach in the class. Now, that's a little controversial. I've got to put that right out there. And we're in constant communication with the Department of Higher Education, with the Department of Health, listening to the CDC. And we are really hopeful that our faculty, who are very much frontline and really our most important asset in terms of the student experience, will be able to continue doing that. But if we are told that is absolutely not healthy, then we will have to change that opportunity for faculty.
You mentioned the controversial nature of it. There's no getting away from that. And there was one professor in the School of Business who refused to get vaccinated or to submit to testing or to wear a mask and claimed that he was now banned from the classroom. What does NMSU do in that situation?
Well, we follow the protocols. You know, it's a condition of employment to follow the rules as we put them. And so as of September 30th, everyone has to either be fully vaccinated, in the process of vaccinated, so that we know that that's happening, and or get tested every single week. And of course, wear your mask indoors at all times. So unfortunately, we really hope everybody will do this for the protection of the greater community. But that's what's the most important, is we have to protect our greater community. And so as a result, if people choose not to want to exercise one of those alternatives, then we have to take disciplinary action.
Indeed. 575-646-2212 is the telephone number to call if you have a question for Dr. Ruth Johnston, who is the Chief COVID Officer at New Mexico State University. I'd like to talk about now some of the incentives that the university is offering in order. Well, first of all, there's an incentive offered from the state for the $100 to get your vaccine, and that's going to be coming to an end pretty soon, right?
Yes. The end of next week. I think it's September 7th. Honestly, I don't have that date right in front of me, but it's coming up soon. And you only have to have your one shot. You don't have to be fully vaccinated by then. So if you look at the Weekly Now newsletter, all that information is included in there. It went out yesterday around 5 o'clock. And so the incentive for the state is in there. Also, the incentive to win tickets and other kinds of prizes from NMSU are included in there as well.
And I did write down that the vaccine incentive ends Tuesday. I think it ends at the end of the month. But of course, these things change fast. And so I certainly wouldn't be surprised if the state continued to offer these incentives, because there was just a note the other day from Dr. David Scrace, who said that we would have to vaccinate 18% more of our population in New Mexico in order to avoid rationing care at New Mexico hospitals. And so what does the university do in order to encourage staff and students to get vaccinated?
Well, we've had vaccine clinics. We try to make it easy, right? So we will go to people where they are. So whether that be the residence halls or Corbett Hall, places where people don't have to kind of go out of their way in order to get the vaccine. So that's one way. Obviously, the students in the residence halls are continuously being reminded of the opportunity to get vaccinated. We also have had T-shirts, T-shirt giveaways. We put it in the Now News. It's in the family and student outreach. We just try to get the word out, you know, that we're highly encouraging. You know, we don't know yet what our population is because we don't have the system in place. They're testing it right now, and we'll have information out very soon. But the DAC, you know, the Doña Ana County is actually doing pretty well. And so we expect that our numbers are probably as good, if not better, than the rest of the county. I'm really pretty pleased about, even though we do have positive cases, of course, on our campus, and they get reported to Aggie Health and Wellness. We keep up a dashboard that anybody can look at on the website now. We're doing better than we were last year at this time in terms of positivities. And so that says to me that our NMSU community really, really cares about each other and about the individual and about trying to stay safe as possible.
During the town hall, it was mentioned that NMSU was doing maybe better than some peer universities. You mentioned keeping an eye on what's happening at other like universities around the country. So what do you look for, and in what ways has NMSU done a better job?
Well, that's interesting. I've been on a couple different webinars and also WACUBO, which is the Western Association of University Business Officers. I'm the president of that right now, and I host a monthly happy hour for people who want to come in and take a look and talk about things that are relevant, as well as the Chronicle for Higher Education. And I think one of the things that we've done that is unique is the way that we've approached managing COVID. Pretty early on, because we've been working on LEADS 2025 and building the robust university system, we already had a great set of people who were invested in making NMSU the best place it could be. So when I became the COVID-19 officer, I expanded that group to include faculty, staff, and administration so that we could all be talking together about how best to manage through the COVID. Who knew it was going to take this long? I mean, honestly, it is rather exhausting to keep pivoting constantly and staying abreast of all the new information. But the good side is that on this pandemic action team that used to meet weekly, then every other week, then monthly, and now we're back to every other week, partly because we're back in session, but also because there's so much more COVID activity happening than there was before due to Delta. Anyway, we've got faculty and staff and administration, and we're all talking together about solving problems and the impact to our students, which obviously is number one, and our faculty, to try to make NMSU as safe as it possibly can be. Now, other universities obviously have to do the same, but what I'm told by my peers is often it's done more top-down and less informed by the people that are being infected. So, for example, this pandemic action team, we meet every other week, and we've got about 40 people who come on. And so we then also have about, at this point, maybe 7 or 8 tiger teams, small ad hoc teams that look at specific issues like the classroom experience or the student experience, or what do we do about supplies, or how do we stand up vaccine clinics, and what do we do to make sure the testing is still happening. So we look at all the aspects of COVID, and then the groups come up with their ideas, and then we talk about them at the pandemic action team. And then we take them into what we call the COVID cart, which is primarily administrators, but also Dr. Kathy Handley, who is one of our virologists and has advised us throughout. Lori from Aggie Health and Wellness, because she's the one who's seeing all the students and is really touching them in terms of their lives and how COVID has affected. Ophelia, who works in the residence halls and knows what's happening with the students in quarantine or isolation. And then, of course, we have the fun stuff we get to talk about, which is the student activities and what we're able to do at any given time during COVID. So we all talk. There's a lot of conversation about COVID every single day, trying to work across the system. And we also, of course, include the community colleges and the pandemic action team.
I wanted to go back to you mentioned being from Seattle, and in February, March of 2020, that community was hit first by COVID.
Yeah.
And so what was going through your mind while you were watching those developments in Seattle, now here in New Mexico?
Well, I've got to say there was a little bit of disbelief that it would affect us as much as it did in Seattle. Seattle is so incredibly dense. But my daughter works for T-Mobile, and she kept telling me, Mom, it's going to happen. It's going to come. It's going to happen. And, you know, for a long time, southern New Mexico, we were not seeing the spread. We don't have the same density. And it also, just the way it was flowing around the United States, clearly it hit the denser areas faster. I still think we've been pretty darn good in southern New Mexico. I'm delighted that I moved here as a result. But the University of Washington, which obviously I worked at for many, many years, I paid a lot of attention to what they were doing with the Institute on Health Metrics and how they were handling the various issues with environmental health and safety. And the public health dean gave us a lot of good resources. And so I would say that we've been learning from each other in many ways, because I'm still in touch and they're also learning from us, because we're a semester school and we start so much earlier. And so I think that colleagueship has been really good. But Seattle, oh my gosh, I finally went up in June. And you know, people really worldwide are pretty good about trying to deal with all of this, but the educational setting has been really hit hard. It's hard to have family there and not be able to really see them. Although my daughter has come down about 6 times already. She loves it down here.
Oh, good, good. Well, what advice is the university offering in terms of testing? So it struck me that now that vaccinated folks, we know, can be just as contagious as anyone else, that we might have even a higher likelihood of asymptomatic spread from vaccinated people. So what does the university want people to know about testing, and should people be getting tested whether they're symptomatic or not?
Well, I wish I had Lori here to answer that question. But what I would say is, if you don't feel good, go get tested. You know, and this is high allergy season. And so sometimes that can get a little bit mixed up between, do I have allergies or do I have COVID? Don't hesitate, go get tested. Actually, testing helps us know what's happening in terms of the spread. There's free testing everywhere. There's testing that you can do at home. And that was in the Now newsletter yesterday as well. Get tested and, of course, get vaccinated. That's most important. You know, I'm vaccinated. I got vaccinated as quickly as I possibly could. But nobody loves wearing masks, but it's a new uniform and we protect ourselves and we protect each other. And it's just a critical something what we do. I was talking to someone yesterday and, you know, we acknowledged that there was very little flu and colds last year. And it's because people were wearing the masks. And, you know, there are comfortable masks. You just have to make sure that you cover your nose and your mouth and not let it dip under your nose like a lot of people do, unfortunately. And we have to take care of each other. I mean, it's very clear that sometimes people forget. And, you know, if you're in a meeting room and you've got plugged nose and you've still got a mask, you've got to figure out ways to cope with each other. But get tested if you don't feel good.
575-646-2212, the number to call for Voice of the Public on KRWG Public Media. We're so glad to have you along and to have NMSU Vice Chancellor Dr. Ruth Johnston, the Chief COVID Officer for the university, here as well to talk about what safety protocols are in place at NMSU for staff, faculty, and students, and to talk about tomorrow's Battle of I-10. See, we're both wearing our Aggie colors today.
Of course.
And so you, I don't imagine, have had an opportunity to have a Battle of I-10 yet in your time here, or did you your first year?
Boy, it was such a blur. I know I went to the games, but I honestly don't know what games they were.
Well, there's
coming
nothing
from the Pac-12. It was a little bit different.
Oh, for sure. Well, there's nothing quite like the Battle of I-10 for us. But what do people need to know that are coming onto campus? You know, whether just from the Las Cruces and Southern New Mexico community or our friends from El Paso who are coming in?
Well, we know it's going to be busy because everybody's super excited and super excited about football resuming and just the competitive nature of athletics. And I know our athletics department just can't wait. So what do we expect? First of all, bring your mask. Please bring your mask. Whatever you do, bring your mask. Now, when you're outside, you don't have to wear your mask. But if you go to the bathroom, you got to wear your mask. If you're going to be inside anything, you need to wear your mask. So make sure that you have that with you. And, you know, a lot of people are like, well, I hate it. If somebody's not wearing a mask, what do I do? Gently remind them to put on their mask. So that's the first important thing. Socially distance as much as you possibly can. There's going to be a lot of tailgating. There's going to be a lot of activity. There's going to be a lot of excitement. But remember that we still have the spread going on in the community, and we need to be super, super careful about that. I think parking is going to be maybe a little bit of an issue, but we've got lots of activity that's going to be bringing people in all day long. It's Hispanic Day also.
One of the things that's been happening for a long time, and so if you're a regular to the NMSU campus or traveling north or south on 25 past university, you know that that construction there is ongoing. There's been lane closures up and down university between I-25 and I-10 as well, but it looks like those were lifted. At least they weren't in place this morning as I made my way onto campus, but I've been thinking about how congested things are just going to be for folks that are coming onto campus to get to the stadium. And then, of course, after the game, it's going to take you a while to get out as well. So I just wanted to have everyone call their minor fans, too, because if El Pasoans are coming in, they may not have been here for a very long time, and that might catch them by surprise. So you definitely want to build in some extra time. And along with that mask, bring your patience with you because, you know, everybody, there has been an interesting dynamic, I think, as people emerge from the pandemic and get back to some normal parts of life. It seems like there might be a little bit of extra frustration that's been pent up. So we just want to make sure that everybody knows what to expect and is not surprised when they encounter it.
You know, another tip that I always like is park far away and walk. That way you don't have to worry about trying to get out of a parking lot and just waiting behind people. There's lots of great parking on this campus, and it's free except for the athletic club parking area and the Fulton Center parking. So get a little extra exercise. And since the game doesn't start till 7:30, at least for those who just want to go for the game and not for the tailgating in advance, it should be pretty nice out.
Indeed. And 575-646-2212. I want to thank our engineer, Mark Johnson. I was thinking, what were we thinking? We should have had Mark host today because then we could have had a show called Johnson & Johnston. But he did. He sent me a link to remind us about Pete's Vax sweepstakes. So there is another incentive program offered by NMSU that looks like it runs through September 7th. And so now.nmsu.edu/vax will get you to the place where you can. These are vaccinated students and employees from any NMSU system location that can enter Pete's Vax Sweepstakes. So I'm scrolling along through this article to see if I can see what some of the prizes that one could win would be. And I don't know if you might know some of those off the top of your head.
Chihuahua tickets is definitely one, and that's fun. I went to one game when I first got here, and what a hoot. And other athletic games as well.
Did you get the nachos in the dog bowl, the Chihuahua's dog bowl?
I did not, but I'm going this weekend, so maybe I'll try that.
My Chihuahua eats out of that dog bowl to this day. I think I've had it for 10 years now. It's or as long as they've been around anyway. It was a great bargain. But as many more people are making their way onto campus, let's talk a little bit about what the mood has been like since in-person classes resumed on campus just last week.
Well, it's very exciting. You know, I usually am on campus Monday and Tuesday and increasingly more often, but I come in really early, like 7 o'clock, and I leave usually fairly late. So yesterday I had to go to a meeting in Corbett and I came in midday and I was just shocked at how many people were around and the cars. It's a college campus again. It is just so exciting that the buzz is there and the students are out with their tables and talking with people, and people are being very cautious. I talked to the ASNMSU president yesterday at that meeting, and I said, so how are things in the classroom? He said, it's going great. He said, people are wearing their masks, they're learning, they're interacting. He said, I'm just so happy to have everybody back. And that's been the example. I've shown a couple lost students various buildings on the campus as I'm walking around, and it just, people are happy. It's wonderful.
What is your impression? Obviously, it was big news that the Pfizer vaccine was fully approved by the FDA. And, you know, what followed in conversation was that this would make it easier for businesses and institutions alike to require vaccines for their employees. I'm sure that's an ongoing discussion. What is the plan regarding that moving forward for NMSU?
Well, we are requiring people to have vaccines as of September 30th, and or decide to get tested every week, if not. You know, we haven't gotten a ton of pushback about that. at this point. I think it's still early. And since we don't really know yet, because we don't have our system established, I would say that, you know, New Mexico as a state, New Mexico State University as a university, people like to take care of each other. And so I'm seeing a tremendous amount of support. Now, are there vaccine hesitant people? Absolutely. And there's lots of reasons for that. I think I've said publicly on Zoom before that my son is one of those. And we've had many a conversation about it. People have the right to their beliefs. But when it comes to employment, we have to protect our community. And so vaccines are required by the September 30th and or the choice to do testing weekly and submit those that proof of test. And of course, the masks, which is another part of the requirement right now, as long as the Delta variant or whatever next variant might come its way is coming.
It really does seem like it's only a matter of time. While we here in the United States are struggling to get enough people vaccinated, most places around the rest of the world just don't have the supply. And so we know that the virus will continue to mutate and spread among communities and in places where vaccination rates are low. So that's just something that we know is going to be coming. The opening words we had from Chancellor Arvizu, I believe it was, who said, you know, that it's a sobering thought that this pandemic may not really end. And he went on to talk about the Spanish flu and to say that through his research, he's learned that even some of the seasonal flu varieties that we deal with and get vaccinated for every year now are descendants, as he described it, of that Spanish flu of 1918. And so it's something that, you know, over time we may have with us for a long time, but there's so many unknowns. How do you approach all of the unknowns?
Oh boy. Well, we live in a world of ambiguity, right? And what I do is every single morning I wake up and I read everything I possibly can for about 15 minutes or longer, depending on my time, about COVID and what's happening. You know, the New York Times, Washington Post, Inside Higher Ed, Chronicle for Higher Ed, just to get a sense of the whole. Because there is no one great answer, right? And so I talked to, you know, my colleague in Georgia, and they never shut down. You know, NMSU never shut down. What we did was we pivoted to mostly online, and then we continued to have those kinds of activities that we needed to have in person safely. But it just depends so much. And unfortunately, this has become a political issue. And to me, it's a health issue. But it's very important to listen to people. I've said many times that even though I don't like some of the feedback that I get, to me, it's a gift. It gives me an opportunity to understand where other people are coming from and to try to make better decisions. And, you know, we have our community colleges in counties that are vastly different from each other. And we need to be somewhat flexible as it relates to how we work with those communities, because people have differing views. So balancing all that, I think that's when you played that clip of me earlier saying, you know, we don't always get good positive feedback. That's expected because we're all human beings and we look at things differently. We behave differently based on how we were brought up or all kinds of different factors. So, you know, how do you deal with it? I think you just have to be as educated as you possibly can be, but also to listen to various views that may not be the same as yours so that you can make good decisions.
Up next, I want to talk a little bit about some of the opportunities that this pandemic may have brought to New Mexico State University. It is 1:33, and Dr. Ruth Johnston is on Voice of the Public today to answer your questions about how NMSU is responding to the pandemic. She is the Chief COVID Officer for the Pandemic Action Team. Can we call you Pat for short?
Yes, absolutely.
And she is also a vice chancellor here at NMSU. And if you have a question for Dr. Johnston, 575-646-2212 is the telephone number to call. And we also invite your questions and comments on Facebook. And we want to thank Monica, who's watching along on Facebook today, who says thank you for prioritizing safety. And I know that's one of the, you know, the regular pieces of feedback that you get along with, you know, the range. And going into the town hall, you said, you know, people are asking a lot of questions. And obviously there's some of those questions that are, you know, the same questions that people have. What are some of the most common questions that you're getting? And let's cover some of those today. And so maybe if some of our listeners are having some of those same questions on their minds, we could address those for them.
Sure. Well, there's always questions about where do I report a positive case, and that is to Aggie Health and Wellness, or depending on the campus that you're at, to your campus. People say, are you allowed to ask if you've been ask somebody if they've been vaccinated? And the answer is yes, but the person doesn't have to tell you, but you can ask the question. People ask, do we regularly disinfect the classrooms? And the answer is yes. Every single night before the next day, the classrooms are vaccinated. People say, ask if there are supplies available. And the answer is yes. We have vending machines in Corbett and other places on the campus that you can get masks and gloves and other kinds of sanitizer, other supplies. People ask, what if somebody is not wearing a mask? So right now we're getting a lot of people frustrated because people are unwilling to wear masks. And so we're trying to increase the communication to remind people that it is absolutely a requirement. But also people say, well, where do I report when I don't like something that's going on? And we ask them to send in their questions, their concerns, their complaints, all of that to COVID-19@nmsu.edu.
COVID-19@nmsu.edu.
Right. Yes. And we have a team of people who try as quickly as possible to answer those questions or to triage the questions so that we can get answers. We know how important this is because this makes people really anxious. It makes us all anxious. So we want answers as quick as we can.
How widespread would you say the issue is of people who aren't wearing masks? And now, as of now, if you're on campus but outdoors, you don't have to wear a mask. Is that correct?
Correct.
And
yes.
You
can choose to wear a mask, though. And I think that that's something to reinforce, that it's perfectly appropriate. If people want to wear a mask, wear a mask. If it makes you feel more comfortable, especially if you're in a more crowded place with a lot of people, like will probably be happening at football on Saturday, people will choose to wear a mask because that spread, that fear of, you know, getting sick again. But yeah, mask wearing is just, it's just really hard. So I think we all need to kind of like step it up and be willing to say, hey, you really need to be wearing your mask right now.
All right.
Or if you're not comfortable with that, asking for help.
Yeah. And let's get to the phone now. Cynthia is on the line. Good afternoon, Cynthia. Thank you for calling Voice of the Public.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
I am currently teaching an in-person class, and I have had two students this week report to me privately through email that they had had a positive COVID test. My concern is that when you read the NMSU policy, you find, of course, that the infectious period can be up to 2 days before there are symptoms and any reason to get tested. And first, I meant to say that I totally agree with Dr. Johnston. People are excited to get back in the classroom. I was excited to get back in the classroom. Everyone in my class is wearing masks and interacting, but we are not given enough space to socially distance. The whole reason to have an in-class meeting is for people to be able to talk in small groups. So my students in the class I'm in are less than 2 feet apart. So when you look at the definition of being close to an infectious person and having an exposure, many of my students meet that definition, and yet, unless the infected students do report through the portal, the students who have been sitting next to someone who was infectious and didn't know it yet will never know. Also, when I asked my class yesterday, when I showed them the policy, 90% of them had not seen it. They did not know they were supposed to report. They did not know they were supposed to quarantine 14 days after a possible exposure. And the other issue is that I know quite a few of my students are not vaccinated yet and are not yet getting regular testing. Quite a few are, but there's no way to know and no way to alert those unvaccinated students in time. Because by the time contact tracing gets to them, if it ever does, they might have infected other people. That's just what it seems like to me based on reading New Mexico Department of Health guidelines and CDC. I am not a scientist. I'm just repeating what they've said. So my question is, you know, how do you reach students, make them aware that they need to report? And I felt like as a teacher, I just have to take responsibility and divide my class so we can socially distance, because inside that classroom, there was no way to be 6 feet or more apart. And I was holding them there for an hour. So they're sitting there for an hour, almost next to someone that they don't know is infectious, even if we're all wearing masks.
I thought that was guidelines. I thought that was an interesting point, because my immediate thought when you talked about the inability to be far enough apart was, and I have not a unique perspective necessarily, but also I'm taking classes here at the NMSU campus. So last semester, that was what one of my professors decided to do, was just divide us into half and have half come one day and half come another day. And I know there's a lot of territory to cover here. So let me let Dr. Johnston get started.
Well, that's a really good idea, Casey, and I know some of the faculty are doing that. So a few thoughts. First of all, I don't know, Cynthia, if you've been able to work with the registrar's office to see if there might be an alternative for a classroom that might allow for more socially distancing. The other thing is, you know, if everybody wears masks and practices COVID-safe practices as much as possible, clearly your classroom is a little too small. We have not seen evidence of the spread in the classrooms. It's usually from family, friends, and neighbors. So that masking is absolutely critical, and your reminding them to do that is really, really helpful. The video that all the students were supposed to have watched, that disturbs me a little bit, if that many people either didn't see the video or sped through the video, because all the information is in there. So maybe we need to do another push for that, because that's got it there. And this is really helpful to hear from that. One last idea, and I don't know if this is possible for you or not, is that the tents now have bales of hay and spools as tables. And a lot of people are starting to use the outdoors. And we intentionally put tents there so that people would have a cover so it wouldn't be quite as hot. I mean, it's still maybe not as comfortable as indoors. But maybe that's a thought for some of the small group work, is to send them out in small groups outside and then ask them to come back at the end of the class.
Yeah. And I have done that. I guess my concern is with both these items, students reporting positive results or employees reporting positive results and faculty members finding ways to socially distance, it's relying on the students and faculty members to make that choice. If I didn't make that choice, my students would feel compelled to come to class and sit 2 feet apart from people, whether they knew they were vaccinated or not.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Obviously, we have a dashboard on the Now site, and so you can look at any given time how many positivities have been reported through Aggie Health and Wellness. And then we take those reports and we have to report to the Department of Health. So that's where all the data comes from. We update the dashboard every single day, and we have considerably less positivity this year at this time than we did last year at this time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the positivity that we do have is where there's a lot of close contact, like athletics. So, you know, the jury's out, but we look at this data every single day, and we talk about it in terms of the concerns and the triggers. But as much as we can encourage our students to report to Aggie Health and Wellness, obviously, if they're sick, it's being reported anyway, because they have to, you know, it's found that they've got COVID. But those are just some ideas. I mean, this is not perfect. I mean, I think that was the question right. Casey asked earlier, is like, there is a lot of ambiguity in here, and it's human behavior. And some people, you know, even the best of us will forget at times to do things the right way. And we need each other to make this work.
Well, and it's just that the possible outcome is so dire that it's,
right.
Even if that is fairly rare, that there is a case of long COVID or something else,
yeah.
That is not yeah. something you want to mess around with.
May I ask you, Cynthia, are you feeling safe at this point?
You know, I'm not as I'm at the front of the classroom, and I'm not sitting in a small group, so I'm more concerned about my students. But I am feeling safer now that I've told them we're just going to have 11 people here at a time and do some of the class online. I did have mm-hmm. one student tell me after class, you know, that she thought I made the right decisions because she had not been feeling safe before sitting next to someone who was not vaccinated and had mentioned that to her. So, mm-hmm. You know, just until we are vaccinated, and even if they, you know, we're looking at a couple more months here with quite a few vulnerable right. people.
Yep. And going into the fall, which right. usually has more cold.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Cynthia, mm-hmm. so much for your call. And sounds yeah. like you did the right thing. And best of luck for the rest of the semester.
Yeah, and thanks. Don't hesitate really if you have issues to write into COVID-19@nmsu.edu.
Okay, yes, I will. Thank you.
Take care now.
Thank you.
575-646-2212, the telephone number for you to call. And if you have a question, now is the time, because we're already beginning to run short on time. Dr. Ruth Johnston is with us today, Vice Chancellor at NMSU and Chief COVID Officer. And we have a Facebook question, and I think I know the answer to this, but there may be more than one location. Where can you get tested on campus?
Aggie Health and Wellness Center.
And that is the one location to go.
Right now, we're looking at setting up another testing location because we expect that we're going to need it. And for those people who choose to do testing over vaccination, we want to have it convenient as possible.
So we talked about reporting after, you know, with Cynthia, after a case is found positive case by Aggie Health and Wellness, then obviously that information gets distributed to the right places. And those individuals are telling the student or staff member exactly what they need to do, which is now go and quarantine. But you automatically get that data. And can you give us an idea of maybe what the recent, most recent numbers look like, where you say we have, you know, a decent number of cases, you know, compared to other places? Give us some context and what does
sure.
that mean?
Well, and the one thing before I say that is, you know, the minute that we find out that there's a positive, the Aggie Health and Wellness team does contact tracing. So they contact the student and ask who they've been around, or the faculty member or the staff member, so that we can figure out how to stop the spread. So that's a very important piece. And I think one of the reasons that why we've been very successful is we've done the contact tracing and can pretty quickly isolate or quarantine depending on what the situation is. So as of yesterday, in terms of the counts, we had 53 total positivity across the system. That's pretty good. Last year at this time, our main campus positivity rate was about 1%. And this year, same date, it's about 0.25. So even with the Delta variant, because we have these additional tools of vaccinations and people are being pretty good about masking, I think that, you know, we're learning to live with COVID. As you mentioned, you know, we're probably not done with this, but we're learning how to live with it, and we need to do that. The vaccination rate in our county is 71%, which is pretty good. And what else? What other data might I want to tell you about? We have about 13,000 students on campus, the main campus.
That's actually one of the things I wanted to touch on. You know, I've never known the answer to that question, actually, so thank you. People ask me all the time and say, I'll have to get back to you on that. So how has this pandemic so far affected enrollment at the university? And what are we looking at in terms of numbers of people returning to campus?
Well, we are a little bit down. We haven't hit our census date, which is the 10th day of classes. We're about 4% down in the system. Main campus is down almost 3%. And for undergrads, it's about 3.5%. Graduate students are pretty much steady. But NMSUO, so NMSU Online, is actually up about 20%. Which is pretty interesting. What that says to me is that people are figuring out alternatives to being face-to-face for education and are finding that it's a good alternative for them. We know that it's been harder for our sophomores in particular to want to come back to yet again another year of what might be potentially online. And our direct from high school students also seem to have taken a dip. So Renee Scott, who's the Vice President of Student Success, actually gave an excellent presentation yesterday to the Board of Regents Committee on Student Success. You know, if anybody wants to see even more data, we have lots of it, but we are down a little bit. It's not horrible. But anytime we're down, we think it's horrible. And she and her team are working really, really hard because in the state, we want people educated. We know that our faculty are much more effective teaching online than they were a year and a half ago. And we know that teaching online is a great opportunity for people. So while we want the face-to-face and the students do, and I think, you know, you're on campus, I'm on campus, there's something about a campus environment. But some people are just saying, you know, maybe I'll take another semester before I do this because things didn't quite settle down like we thought they might have been even in the middle of summer this year.
That's right. It's 151 and 575-646-2212 is the telephone number to call if you have a question for Dr. Ruth Johnston, who is the chief COVID officer at NMSU. I mentioned a few minutes ago, I wanted to talk a little bit about what opportunities this pandemic may have actually created for many different folks on the university campus.
Well, it certainly changed the way we did work. You know, I said earlier, you know, I came from Seattle. Well, Seattle has had telework forever because it's so dense and the traffic is so bad. And there's so much IT and telecom. People have kind of gotten into the habit. Well, here at NMSU, that was not part of the culture to do telework at all. And so when the pivot happened, there are a number of different units on campus that have found that they're more productive if they are in a either fully remote or in a hybrid way. So I would say that that is one thing that has changed tremendously. And there are some people I talk to who really, really want to be back full time because they are more productive that way. And there's others on the other extreme. So at NMSU, we've tried to be incredibly flexible. Number one is always mission. And so that means student service. And that means the college experience. So there are clearly some people whose jobs do not lend themselves to doing remote, but where possible, we've been trying to be as flexible as we can. I think we've learned that Zoom is a tool that is not going to go away and, in fact, gives us opportunities. I know that sometimes when I'm looking at spreadsheets, it's actually a whole lot easier to do it on Zoom than being in one room looking at a spreadsheet that's tiny up on a wall. So to me, that's another one. Actually being able to see people across the system is different. I've talked to people in Carlsbad or up in Grants or in Alamogordo who I would never have been able to see on a regular basis. And I've heard many people say, oh, I've talked to you forever. Or I've emailed with you, but I've never seen you. You know, this is kind of cool. So I think that's a positive. Honestly, I think the two things that are hard are conflict management and process improvement. Those two I've struggled with because some of it just requires face-to-face or people-to-people kinds of opportunities. But the pandemic's also had, you know, some issues with mental health and emotional health, and we need to really pay attention to that, especially as the pandemic kind of drags on. People are burned out. One of the good things is you're home. One of the bad things is there's not necessarily a separation between home and work. And as a result, we know that some people work super, super hard, too many hours, and other people have a hard time getting the direction they need in order to be good at doing the work they're doing. But all in all, I think we're figuring it out, and we're being more flexible as we work through it. And I think people are learning new tools. And, you know, higher ed is always accused of not being really a learning organization. And I think probably more than any time in my career, we're all learning. And that's got to be a good thing.
Well, and it has created some interesting research opportunities. If I'm not mistaken, going back to the early days of the pandemic, research done right here on the NMSU campus to test, well, sewer water for COVID.
Wastewater.
Sorry, yes, that
wastewater sounds, testing.
That sounds much better.
We've been doing all kinds of research as a result, and a lot of partnerships. That's one of the, I guess, a good thing with the pandemic. And we've been much more involved with the community and trying to assist with the variety of activities that we've needed to do in terms of, you know, vaccination clinics and testing. And we've had research on the campus with wastewater. We've had some collaboration opportunities with, like, with Blue Cross. We've actually secured $1.73 million in funding to mitigate the pandemic. And a lot of our faculty are working very hard in doing different things. And let me give you a couple examples. One is we've had a clinical testing laboratory here on the campus who's been supporting not only us, but the entire state. Another one is developing a rapid and cost-effective monitoring of the virus at a community level by wastewater with Dr. Zhang in civil engineering. We've had some researchers working on the spread of the virus in bats, Kathy Hanley and Terry Orr in biology and Karen Mabry in biology. And then we've had HERV money, which you will probably talk about. So the federal CARES money, we've had a tremendous amount of dollars come into us. Half of it's gone to students, of course, which is really important. But also we were able to create a research, a fund used for faculty to enhance educational equipment, research assistance, augment research facilities, offer tutoring. There's just so many different things that people have been able to do as a result.
Yeah,
not just of the CARES fund, but just because we care deeply about research and what a thing to research, but COVID.
Yeah, it'll certainly provide so many rich opportunities for research in so many different fields. You touched briefly on the mental strain that this has created. So what advice do you have for both staff and faculty and students in terms of what help there is available if they are feeling added anxiety or stress or depression?
Well, we have an employee assistance program, and that is something that is available to all employees. And so I would encourage people to reach out to them. And in fact, I know a number of people are doing that. Also, Aggie Health and Wellness Center can provide some resources, certainly for students all the time, but also can be used as a resource to help make connections. People with health insurance should be reaching out. I think connection during this period of time is really hard and really important. So, you know, getting out and exercising is really important here. And you can do that pretty easily in Las Cruces. One of the things that I try to do with staff whenever possible, and it's starting up again, but it took a while, is do walking meetings. Just grab a partner, a friend, a colleague, and get out and walk this beautiful campus, because it gives you a chance to help your body while you're dealing with so much stuff in your mind. And, you know, it's probably been the thing that saved me the most by walking at least 5 miles a day. That's my preferred way, or swimming. But it's something that's free. You can just get out and do it. And it really, really helps. And it does help your mental health if your body is healthy as well.
And with all this rain that we've had, I know there's research suggesting that being outside in nature and surrounded by green things, it is very, very beneficial. And so with all this rain we've had, we have so much more green now than we
flowers. Yes. It's so beautiful. Oh, my gosh.
Yes, indeed. Well, we are running short on time. And so I know it's not really fair to broach a subject like this with just about a minute or so left. But I just wanted to get, and we'll have to do this a full show on this sometime soon. But the governor is committed to free higher education. Just give us a few final words on, you know, what you expect that will mean for New Mexico and for New Mexico students in the future.
Wow. Free higher education. Well, isn't that wonderful? Obviously, we're very involved with the state as we talk about this and the various scholarships that are available here. The state of New Mexico is amazing in its contribution to higher education, having come from a state which wasn't investing in higher ed. So there's a lot of details to be worked out on this, but we know right now that 62% of all of our students get some type of financial aid. And so you know, whether that be free aid or maybe even have to pay loans back. But we don't want students to have to take loans. That's for sure. We want students to get a free education, but we also have to cover costs. And education is expensive because we have the best and the brightest teaching our students. So we have to do that mix, right, of high quality and free education. So we got to work that out together. And we'll do it because we've got the will, and we're very tied into what the state's doing, and we appreciate the support that we get, and they're very open to talking with us, and so we'll figure it out together.
No doubt, a long way to go to get to that point. It is 2:00. Dr. Ruth Johnston, Vice Chancellor at NMSU and Chief COVID Officer, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. We hope you come back soon. And one reminder to all fans: bring your masks to the Battle of I-10 tomorrow.
Yep. Stay safe. Thanks, all.
Thanks very much. And coming up next on KRWG Public Media, well, we have NPR News and Leora Zeitlin with Intermezzo by Request. This is KC Counts. I want to thank you for joining us on Voice of the Public. If you are just tuning in and missed some of what Dr. Johnston had to say today about safety protocols and so many more issues at NMSU regarding COVID-19 planning, please give us just a few minutes, and the show will be available for you anytime at krwg.org. Click on local radio.